Nisambula Vinaka, you're listening to Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Koroy Hawkins. Coming up...
It is very disconcerting and, in fact, downright depressing. Two of my patients who I attended to passed away in the last 72 hours.
Fiji's former health minister says the nation's health system is collapsing under the pressure of the pandemic.
There's no guarantee that the Indigenous Kanak movement will win the December referendum, but it's a sign that the debate is going on.
New Caledonia's pro-independence groups have been boosted by the re-election of the Congress president, Roch Wahmathan.
I thought New Zealand played really well in their semi-final, and we didn't manage to give them that space and time on the ball.
And we hear from the Fiji Sevens coach, Gareth Baber, talking about defending Fiji's Olympic champion status. Fiji's former health minister says the nation's health system has collapsed under the pressure of the pandemic. Fiji continues to report daily record numbers of COVID-19 cases and the death toll continues to climb. RNZ Pacific reporter Elisha Foon has more.
Pressure is mounting on frontline workers amid Fiji's health crisis. The nation now facing more than 18,500 active cases and more than 200 deaths. Fiji's former health minister, Dr. Neil Sharma, says the bulk of people are dying at home.
It is very disconcerting and, in fact, downright depressing. Two of my patients who I attended to passed away in the last 72 hours. The mortuaries are full. You know, we run out of body bags. The doctors and nurses are, exhausted. And there's great concern within the profession that they're not being cared for. Well, healthcare systems literally collapsed, I think.
An unvaccinated health worker is among the 11 people who have died this week. Dr. Sharma says it's crucial all health workers consider getting vaccinated and understand the risks if they don't.
Healthcare workers need to consider being vaccinated if they're going to deal with the community and, be able to function fully. When you have a huge volume of infection in the community and you're exposed to it, then you're definitely taking a risk to yourself and to your near and dear.
Meanwhile, UNICEF's Pacific representative, Sheldon Yeet, has been providing support to the Fijian government. He says it's important people don't overwhelm the health system and stay home if they're symptomatic.
No, I don't think it's collapsed, but I think it's certainly under stress, as it is, again, around the world. It impacts every component of the health system itself. There are limited numbers of trained staff, limited facilities, limited ICU facilities here.
Although misinformation is still an issue among some villages, the message is getting through for the majority. Rules like no jab, no job are having an impact. And now some schools are telling Year 13 students they need to be vaccinated to complete their education. Joni, a resident in Fiji's Western District, says his village has been provided with some good advice on how to stay protected.
I'm feeling safe at the moment, and we've been advised by our village head to be aware of social gathering. Everyone has to have a bottle of sanitizers with a mask on whenever you move around in the village.
He earns $5.50 an hour at a hotel on the island which caters for tourists. He's working 21 days in a row to help put food on the table for his family and some of his neighbours.
Most of the villagers here, they can't even afford to get a phone. I just came back from town. I bought lots and lots of vegetables. Bundle of cabbage, I put one aside for me, one for another family, one for another family, one for another family, with four tomatoes to go with that cabbage, one packet noodles, with whatever little things you have, try and share. Think of other families.
He says the only way people can cope is by community supporting one another.
Meanwhile, the Fiji government has denied claims health staff in Fiji who test positive for COVID-19 must continue working. An Australian media report says symptomatic healthcare workers have been told that they must continue working to ensure health clinics are operating at full capacity. But the health secretary, Dr. James Fong, told Elisha Foon that was not the case.
The only memo that we put out was that we were escalating our PPE protocols to ensure that any contact with potential cases is a low-risk contact. We have set up this program together with OSMET and NZMET. They have representatives on the ground that are helping us sort this out. So at no point did we say that a positive person, especially a positive person who's symptomatic, should continue working. We just escalated our PPE program, just like they do in every other country that's in mitigation phase, to ensure that any contact with a positive person is a low-risk contact, and it also protects our HR requirements. So we're not standing down people continuously.
Thank you for clarifying that. Also, the Ministry of Health in New Zealand are flying over a person who has tested positive for COVID-19. They're coming to Auckland Hospital. How do you feel about that? Why did that happen?
See, all I know is that it was organised by the UN, by some people within the UN organisation. Further than that, I do not know more about the details of that case.
Okay. Does that mean that the COVID patient is a UN worker?
Yes, I presume so. I have to presume so, that he's working within the UN.
Would you like more health workers from New Zealand to be in Fiji?
Yes. But again, we are... There is an OSMET team here, NZMET team. They are looking at how we can ensure that we have utilized efficiently all our resources, and then we bring in extra help. We've got that process going right now. And at the moment, because we've mobilized a lot of people into the central division, we even people from the northern division and other western division into the central division, we have also optimized the utilization of non-medical staff. We are getting into that space where we are being able to deal more effectively with what we got.
How many staff are on the ground? Have you asked retired health workers to come back into the force? Tell me about that.
I haven't got the numbers with me, but I do know that I got about, we ended up with an extra 40. Then after that, I've got another 160 people coming in. And we are looking at our general practitioners. I still have to work out the number of general practitioners because that way they were being engaged through the Ministry of Economy, not through our ministry.
So these people are retired Fijian workers, is that correct?
No, some of them are actually, new graduates that are not yet in employment. Our retired workers, a lot of our retired workers are actually working in other islands. So the ones that I got, the 40 or so that we are talking to are the ones that we can get our hands on.
Is the health system collapsing? Has it collapsed? You're under huge pressure.
I don't think so. We've changed our focus to deal with preventing death and severe disease, or to deal with severe disease and prevent death. My problem with the word that you are using with regard to collapse is like you're saying we are giving up. And that's why I really find it difficult to answer that type of question. It's like you're trying to say that the Ministry of Health has given up on its people. And that's something that we don't do. But I do believe that we are in a position to deal with the... Now, that because we can't prevent any new case from evolving, we are in a position, we are focusing on managing the severe end of the spectrum of disease. And a lot of it has to go back again to there's a segment of the population that have denied the existence of the disease. There's a segment of the population that don't believe in vaccination. And there is a segment of the population that always had a problem with health, engaging for healthcare. That was there before we had COVID. Even when we had leptospirosis, typhoid, every time we have that, we have a portion of the population that will present late. It is exaggerated at this point in time by the impact of COVID.
Roch Wamutan has secured his third consecutive presidency of New Caledonia's Congress. The pro-independence Kanak leader registered a convincing victory on Wednesday, securing 29 out of the 54 available votes for the speaker-like role. Anti-independence groups fielded two candidates, Virgin Rafanak of the Rassemblement Party, the leading anti-independence party, who won 7 votes, while Annie Kaize of the Caledonia Ensemble Party won 6 votes. The balance was made up of 12 blank votes or abstentions. Journalist Nick McClellan, a longtime specialist on New Caledonian politics, joins me now. Welcome, Nick. What's the significance of this result?
There's a number of key outcomes. Firstly, Rokwamiton's not a bad president of the Congress. I think many politicians feel he's done a good job at a time that New Caledonia's politics are polarised since the 2018 referendum on self-determination. More importantly, the 29 votes that he got included 26 members of the independence parties, but also three votes from the new Wallisian party, Evi Osinien, that's Pacific Awakening. This small group holds just three votes, but it's the balance of forces between supporters and opponents of independence, and they threw those votes behind the independence campaign. It's a sign of the dialogue between the large Wallisian, Tahitian, Futunan population in New Caledonia with Indigenous Kanaks as they look to the future. And symbolically, this vote retains what's been called the Islander majority in the Congress. The other key point, however, and I think the most important, is that the failure of the anti-independence forces to unite around one candidate shows significant bitter divisions within the anti-independence camp. There were attempts to forge a deal between the Avenir en Confiance coalition, that's three anti-independence parties that are united together in a parliamentary group, and Philippe Gomez's Caledonie Ensemble party. They couldn't agree for various reasons on one candidate for the position and split the vote. And indeed, Madame Rufinac only got the seven votes from her own party, Rassemblement. The other members of the Avenir en Confiance, this anti-independence coalition, voted blank. It's put in an empty envelope into the ballot box. It's a signal of the disenchantment, the disagreement that goes in. Now, these parliamentary manoeuvres are a reflection of broader debates as New Caledonia heads towards a referendum on the 12th of December this year.
Yes, and with that coming up, how important is it in terms of positioning, I guess, for the FLNKS, having both the presidency of the government and the presidency or the speaker's position in Congress?
I think it's very important at this time. Just earlier this month, President Louis Mapou, a member of the Union for National Independence parliamentary group, was elected as president of the government of New Caledonia. And he will now be attending on the 6th of August the virtual forum leaders meeting, bringing the voice for the first time in 40 years of a Kanak independence leader as head of government in New Caledonia and talking at regional level, you know, as a supporter of independence. Having the leadership of the Congress is important, given that it has a role in setting you know, the agenda of the Congress, looking at what legislation moves forward, has a role in allocating positions within the Congress and executive and so on. So once again, a significant position. I think also it just puts winds in the sail of the independence movement as they head towards December the 12th. France unilaterally set the date for this referendum, and the division within the anti-independence camp is obviously something that the FLNKS is not exactly unhappy about.
And the truth of the matter is, when you crunch the numbers, both the past referendums have been close, but have been no votes. And even if every Kanak, every pro-independence Kanak on the current voter list votes yes, they still need the support from elsewhere to get over that line.
The Kanak people have been made a minority in their own country after generations of settlement, colonial settlement and migration. At the last census, the Kanaks are still only about 40% of the population. There's a large Wallisian, Futunan, Tahitian community, people who came in the 1960s, and a significant population of people of European heritage. Also quite a lot of intermarriage in this over the generations. So the Kanak for a long time have been saying we need to build links with the people dubbed the victims of history, the descendants of the settlers, the convicts, the migrants who've come to New Caledonia. There's been a lot of talk of building a common destiny. And I think, you know, the symbolism of this new Walesian party backing the Speaker in the Congress, you know, it's a sign that beyond the obvious parliamentary manoeuvring, the political games that happen in any parliament, there's also a debate going on as people look to see what's going to happen. So there's no guarantee that the Indigenous Kanak movement and their supporters in the independence movement will win the December referendum, but it's a sign that the debate is going on and people are looking to determine what will happen into the future, particularly as in a country battered by the COVID pandemic, battered by the economic fallout of border closures and so on. It's going to be a tough call to win this referendum for the independence movement, but they've edged closer in 2018 and 2020, and there's a significant opportunity in December this year.
Fiji's rugby sevens team has dedicated its Olympic victory to the people at home who are struggling amidst the country's COVID-19 health crisis. Fiji defeated New Zealand 27-12 in the men's sevens final in Tokyo to defend the title they won in Rio 5 years ago. Captain Jerry Tuwai said the win is very special for the team and all of Fiji. Despite curfews in place in parts of Fiji, there were outdoor celebrations of the gold medal winning performance overnight across the country. Reporter Vinnie Wiley spoke with the Fiji sevens coach, Gareth Baber, shortly after the win and began by asking him what his thoughts were about the match.
Probably just, you know, a job well done. The last year or so has been particularly challenging for very many different reasons. Not least, you know, any sort of preparation towards an Olympics is based around the sports science of planning and putting that into some sort of document that you can follow, and that document that I've been following has changed about 50 times in the last year. So to be able to negotiate that and navigate your way through to a point where you can see the fruits of your labour come out as they needed to do at the right time, you know, fills me with, you know, a good deal of pride that we got that right as a coaching staff. And you know, that's the challenge all the time when you're in that position, is getting it right in the race against the other teams that are doing the same thing. And I suppose for a small nation like Fiji, in relation to that and the, you know, the limited resources that we generally have and personnel, that you know, we've got some good minds and good people in that have managed to create some qualities in the program which have elevated performance again to get ourselves a gold medal at the Olympics.
What were you feeling on the sideline watching the game as it unfolded? You obviously started strongly, but a couple of times in that first half, New Zealand obviously just got back within a try and they were sort of within touching distance. Were you calm, confident? What were you saying?
I was pretty calm. I was pretty calm at half time as well. I mean, I thought New Zealand played really well in their semi-final, and we didn't manage to give them that space and time on the ball that they had in the semi-final. And that was our, you know, that was a plan that we had in place to get into the game. So we didn't let them settle. If you let New Zealand settle, and they'll pull you around the field, and obviously that becomes a fatigue factor. So we managed to control the game early, but I always knew they'd get parts of the game, and then you're obviously relying on your systems and your game when you haven't got the ball to give you some chance of getting it back and then creating more pressure. And I always knew we'd get one or two more chances. It was whether we take them or not. And fortunately, you know, the pressure told in the game. We stuck to what we needed to do defensively, and we managed to score some great tries as well. And I think that coming towards the end there, yeah, I was a little bit nervous. But again, I was pretty relaxed throughout the whole of the final, because I know when we get to finals what we generally play like. And, you know, we've got a pretty good record over the last sort of 4 or 5 years of getting to finals and putting them to bed.
You talked about being calm, and your players who are used to performing in these finals, and I guess they're used to the pressure, the expectation that they get from themselves and, of course, from the Fijian public, and that comes with success. You know, we have it here in New Zealand as well with rugby. So do you see your players get nervous in these sorts of games, or is it something that just when you're at that high level, you know, you learn to deal with it because that's what you do?
Yeah, you learn to deal with it, but obviously, you know, there's some young players in there as well who, you know, this is the first time they've really been in a final. We played in Oceania, but they didn't play in a final. They played a round robin. This is the first final they've ever won. There's, you know, three or four of them there. But, you know, what you do is you try and recreate that as much as you possibly can in your trainings. You can't replicate a final, but you can certainly replicate the intensity, the stress that an individual feels. And a big part of our training has been to condition them to respond in that way. And I'm particularly pleased for some of those younger players, as I said, who have stepped into the positions and held those positions and shown, so you know, good deals of maturity in being able to perform to the levels they did here. And I think one of the biggest probably helps in all that has been the fact that we were able to play sevens tournaments in Fiji. And anybody will tell you, if they have played, they're just how intense, physically intense, emotionally intense they are. And, you know, that's been a huge reason why we were able to lift the gold medal today, was because, you know, obviously the teams that we've played against put us up to that level.
Jiri Tuwai, of course, now has two gold medals. But for the rest of us, the players and yourself as the coach, Gareth, it's obviously the first time you get one in your hands. Does it look like you thought it did? Maybe Jiri showed you the one he had from 5 years ago. How does it feel to be an Olympic gold medalist?
Yeah, look, I'd never seen a gold medal before. I've never seen a medal. Commonwealth I have, but I haven't seen anything to do with Olympics. And yeah, Jiri was trying to give me his medal. and I said, I'm not going to be taking that off you. And he said, no, I won one. You have this one. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, fantastic. That's the man that he is. You know, he would never take the credit for what he has done and he has achieved. I mean, it's a phenomenal feat to have done what he's done. And we've got two members of staff that have done the same as well. You've got Nadal Thawani Buka and you've got William Kung, who have physio and S&C, who have been on the same journey with both Ben and myself now, who have got that done as well. So, you know, it's a particularly proud moment, I think, for Fiji, that in the space of those 8 years that, you know, over that period of time, that they've managed to put programs together that have reaped the biggest reward of rugby sevens in the world. And I think that, you know, that reflects very proudly on what's been put in place in Fiji.
And that's Pacific Waves for today. Remember, you can listen to us free on Apple, Spotify, iHeart or any podcast platform. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating and review so others can also find us. Mo te manda.